Good morning. Today is Tuesday, May the 25th. Joining us this morning is Fortuna City Manager Merritt Perry. Pensive Merritt Perry. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Now, before the show, I guess in the full spirit of everything, I'd asked Merritt what his formal training had been in, and he declined to share because I had had two questions here for our opening, and I'm going with the one that was the first in order, because he wouldn't share if he was knowledgeable or if I could go to another one.
I need a fighting chance if I could get one.
Why is the sky blue?
The sky is blue because all of the other colors are reflected away first, much like the ocean. The other ends of the spectrum, red dissipates first, other colors dissipate, and that's the last one left.
Was this your formal training or was this your basic knowledge?
Basic knowledge. That falls in the basic knowledge.
I knew that was always better than formal training. Sunlight, which we see as white light, is actually a mix of colors of red, orange, yellow, blue, green, and purple. When skylight passes through the Earth's atmosphere, these colors are deflected and scattered in many different ways by atmospheric molecules and other material in the air. The color blue and purple are deflected the most, causing these colors to scatter all over the sky. Because the human eye can detect blue much more readily than purple, it is blue that we see when we look up in the sky.
That's almost full credit.
You were almost full. That was, with today's grade inflation, that would be probably a 4.1 in your class.
Let's stop the show right now.
Yeah. It ain't going to get any better.
It's great being here today.
Yeah. Oh, geez. So last time we got together, you had we talked about some of the special events in summer and that things were in question. Not sure if there'd be ability to, if it did, what form it would take, yada, yada, yada. The state was still doing whatever the goofiness of the state's doing. Well, I guess that hasn't changed. But that things were kind of up in the air. At this point, has there been any change or clarification?
Yeah, there has been some changes. So, you know, some of the first events that come up, Fortuna Rodeo Auto Expo. So where we were at last time that I came in, the county was still certifying larger events and the state was still releasing guidelines for different types of events. So ultimately what the county settled on, you know, there was a request from a group of city managers, hey, could we take a look and could we certify or approve the events in our own jurisdictions? And so that's ultimately where it ended up going. I think it was a huge burden of work on the county, and they felt like if there's guidelines from the state, the city, you know, just like with other, you know, with all the other public health mandates governing businesses, the cities or other jurisdictions could handle those. So we have now the city will be approving those events through the special events permits, and the county's not requiring a certification.
Too bad that wasn't a philosophy embraced early on. Not that it would have changed anything.
Yeah.
But it certainly would have allowed the workload at their level to be less and for the locals to kind of have a feeling like they had some input.
Yeah. You know, I think we've always had the ability for input and dialogue, you know, but those public health orders that were previously there, they were pretty black and white. There wasn't a lot of interpretation. But as guidelines started being released for the different event types, you know, I think there was more interpretation that came into it. And, you know, how do you protect public health and still have this event? And, you know, it's interesting.
Well, it's not like you want to risk the public health.
No,
so you're going to go out and tell everybody to cough on everybody at any point.
No.
So, you know, it seems like everybody was shooting for the same goal and the same behavioral change or adjustments.
I think so. I will say that it's interesting to have a doctor review a rodeo plan. I mean, that's one thing. You know, I don't know if I'll experience that again.
Well, take it to an educator. Don't they have doctors after their name?
Yeah, possibly.
Or your knee guy.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to look this one over? I'm looking for a cheap thrill here.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. And I feel like the city's capable of doing the review. And we were working with some of the special events. And the first ones, again, are Rodeo and Auto Expo. So we helped them put together those plans. And we were trying to think of ways to put protections in place that would be reasonable and practical to follow. So
that's what I was going to ask. So what are the differences that were... What were the priorities that were identified that then had to be accounted for?
The toughest things to comply with, you know, for example, with rodeo is it's, you know, it's a seated event, and the guidelines for seated events, they really applied more to like a baseball stadium where you could have assigned seating. So having a requirement for assigned seating when you have a rodeo grandstand is, that's a tough thing when you're selling,
every other seat
when you're selling tickets, right? You know,
right.
So what are we going to do? Tape numbers on all of that. So they're working on the details for that. We're still uncertain what the requirements are going to be. It sounds like right now that, you know, with the CDC guidelines, the state's trying to match those more so, and that there may not be many.
And those are less stringent and less strident than what California
is. Right. So how far do we go down that road when June 15th, you know, everything could be wide open?
Yeah, blown up again.
Right. So we've got a pretty good plan that complied with the blueprint at the time. And I think that the events that we're looking at can do that. But the question is, if all those things go out the window and it's wide open and people have been vaccinated that want to be vaccinated, and those who haven't won't, and
mixing the two,
then it seems like there's a potential back to the old event with few restrictions. But right now we're working under the assumption that we're proceeding with the events that follow the state guidelines for the different types of gathering. But so it seems like it can only get better at this point between now and June 15th.
You're trying to be so nice not to say the redneck factor, aren't you?
What's that?
I won't get away from me as far as taking the vaccine.
Oh.
You know, and rodeos tend to attract those that are a little bit more blue-collar in their perspectives.
I don't know. It's a mixed bag. Everybody has a different motivation. I mean,
Sure. Yeah. But, what do they call them? Super spreader events.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fine. So if we pull that title off, you know, be normal.
Yeah.
You know, if
I'm done guessing who's going to get a vaccine and who's not. I mean, in the past, it might have been not a redneck thing.
Group
it might
or
have
that
been
group,
a liberal
yeah.
thing, right?
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, maybe more.
Everything's all mixed up. Yeah.
I'm not going to guess, you know.
So you're going to have banners, no coughing?
No. I mean, basic things like people who want to – I mean, what
– because it's an honor system.
Putting basic measures in place. I mean,
yeah.
You know, do people have the ability to space out? Are you following the requirements? You have hand sanitation and all those types of
– everything available.
And,
yeah.
You know, and masking and all that. I think the thought is that if we can design the event to comply with the guidelines, great, and we're moving ahead. And then if they can design – and then if the restrictions go away, then even better.
Based more on intent, which
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. KINS makes sense in you. Hmm. That's like two wins in one segment for you.
What's that?
Well, you got the question right.
Yeah.
To start it, and then at the end here, you're making sense.
Yeah,
this is a frightening, frightening morning.
We try.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:24. We're back. He has not left the room. Merritt Perry is still here, looking to achieve even higher goals from this show.
We're on a roll today.
Yeah, dinner roll. Cinnamon roll?
Too early.
Okay, for cinnamon rolls?
Oh, no, for dinner roll.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that just depends if you pulled an all-nighter or not, huh?
Right.
Oh, jeez. So what are, with the ability for the city now to kind of self-determine, what is going to be the experience for people coming to the rodeo, auto expo, or any of the other softball tournaments, any of those types of things that the city has coming up? What is going to be the change, or will we be even able to determine a change?
That's a good question, and I don't think we'll really know until after June 15th. I know the sports leagues are getting going again, so I would hope those are pretty straightforward and seem like a regular season for folks. So I'm glad people are excited to get out and use the park facilities.
Really, yeah, as long as you're mowing them, you may as well use them, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Speaking of mowing, you want to hear about a pretty cool donation that we got?
always.
It might border on advertising, so.
Always.
An unknown, yeah. So we the city received a donation of an 8-foot mower to help keep our ball fields in shape from Valley Pacific. So we thought that was really cool. So, Renner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
the gas guys.
The gas guys, yeah.
Okay.
So we're really
One
excited.
Of those big wide ones like the golf courses have?
8 foot, yeah.
Well, okay, so, maybe a mini, but the same style, or kind of like a mini combine?
Yep, heavy-duty one. So we're really excited. It's going to really kind of push us forward to be able to keep our fields in great shape with less staff time. And staff time's always the challenge. We have a lot to mow this time of year. So
right.
We're really excited and pleased about that.
It's an 8 foot wide job?
8 foot wide.
It only cost $8,000?
Oh, a lot more than 8,000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I heard dollar sign, I heard
about,
eight. I guess
about
I can
five times that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're expensive.
And the maintenance of those things is probably pretty exciting,
too. Yeah, part
of
that's supplied by the vendor. So it was purchased at Wildwood Saw in Fortuna. So that's another good thing.
Jeez. And then you got sales tax out of the deal, too.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah. Double win. Right?
You can pay for the gas now, too.
Things are looking up.
Yeah. Oh, and maintenance is something probably that's going to be a little bit more challenging as time goes on because of some of the seasonal stuff that you would like to be able to hire historically may not be able to because of some of the challenges that are coming down the pipeline.
And we are taking on more, you know, in the future it's likely we'll take on more parks and trail. We're looking at expansion of Newburgh Park and purchasing an adjacent 7.7 acre parcel. We received a grant to purchase about 8
more ball fields.
Or
there's trails or gardens?
There's a master plan that we did, so it essentially it would extend it in the southerly direction. We want to see some regulation soccer fields so the city has the ability to host tournaments, and then also...
That's not beyond the creek, is it?
No, between the existing park and Strong's Creek.
Okay.
And then also a skate park, the Fortuna Skate Park Collective. It's a group that's been fundraising to put a skate park in. So we've got room for a parking lot, a skate park, some soccer fields... And then extending the walkways and trails.
You're going to have a complex if you don't watch out.
Yeah, we're there. We're there. We have a master plan.
Not an attitude, it, so. A complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you're starting to lose ground
I'm
now.
Losing. This interview's over.
Another threat.
So the mower, you know, as we take on more tools like that are going to be really important because it takes a lot of staff time. With better tools, you use less staff time.
Well, and it's not like you have more staff time, you know, to be able to handle this stuff.
Right.
Now, you guys have rider mowers, though, don't you?
We do.
Already?
The
cutting surface is just a little smaller.
Yeah, and the city had one for years. We had a 12-foot mower, and it was a lemon, and it had
Crapped
a
out
lot
eventually.
Of problems. And for years, we've taken it everywhere that we could to try to fix it, and it never seemed to work. And
oh, really? Just out of the gate, it was
very challenging. And, I mean, we're talking about over 15 years ago when they first purchased it, but it hasn't been useful for the city. It's been a maintenance nightmare, so the new one is going to be great.
So what do you do with something like that? Just part it out and not worry about it?
Auction. Is it public
agency? Oh, I see.
Buyer beware.
Yeah, there better be a big asterisk on that one.
Do you need a 12-foot wide mower for your little
oh, yeah.
space here
yeah,
in the studio?
Take home or about 5 minutes. if it was running.
We'll make you a really good deal.
Yeah, I bet you would. Oh, are there other pieces of gear that you'd love to have that could really save time or expand the efficiencies of staff? I mean, something like that seems pretty straightforward. Yeah, you're only making half the passes or a third of the passes. Of course, it's going to pick up time and save effort.
Yeah, some of the equipment for the streets crew. I mean, one of the big time savers for a city is we have the giant vacuum trucks, and they're used not only for just cleaning up, you know, if you're working in a manhole or a situation where you have water coming in, it's like a giant vacuum. You can also excavate.
A dry vac.
Yeah.
Wet, dry.
And you can also excavate with them, use like a high pressure water wand. So when you're excavating around water leaks and vector trucks are one of the biggest time savers. And so in the future, we'll be looking to replace one of those.
Yeah. You know, I've had a question, and I don't know if the city's got any of the blowers, you know, you mow the lawn and
weed
then you
blower
blow.
Or leaf blowers?
Yeah. Why are they blowers and not suckers? Well, you blow it, now it's on, you know, it's out in the street, it's in the gutter, and somebody else has to clean it up. Why not just have a giant vacuum on your back?
We have a sweeper truck that has a vacuum. So when we do the streets, the sweeper truck
sucks it all up. Yeah. Same principle for the parks and rec guys. when they're out doing the weed whackers and stuff, and then they have to blow off the sidewalks or whatever.
Yeah.
And you just suck it up and not worry about
and
it.
And I think those guys have it down. I don't want to pretend to be an expert in this case. But if
this is more of a landscaping question rather than a crew.
If they blow the leaves onto the lawn and then they mow it up and they have, you know, one of the mowers that will pick things up, I think that works well. But, again, we're getting out of my area of expertise. Let's talk about the
mowing, lawns and you don't go back too far, huh?
Yeah,
that's why you have goats?
No, I do a
sheep.
Lot of mowing. Yeah, cattle, all of the above.
Yeah. Well, you got the fertilizer part figured out.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, one of the common discussion points has been housing. Last, I don't know, couple years, I guess. I think we may have touched on it last time. With the housing demand, you know, and it, you can say low rent housing, and okay, that triggers all kinds of other things. But just working guy and gal housing that are starting out, you know, they don't. It's not buying the house; it's basic shelter. Are there any plans for entry level housing, not low income, entry level housing or condos, that type of project? Is Fortuna doing anything to either encourage, facilitate any of those types of things to, I guess, basically allow the workforce that everybody's scrambling for to be able to live in our area?
Yeah. Yeah. The city's done a number of things. And again, the city, you know, well, some cities and in the past so far, Fortuna has not been in the business of building housing themselves. But what, you know, the city does have a housing element that incentivizes different types of projects and also make sure that there's enough property available for different types of projects, including multifamily, low-income housing. So, you know, there's properties that are open and available for that type of development in the city, but so far the city hasn't moved forward with initiating it projects ourselves.
Can you incentivize? I wouldn't suspect that anybody is of the opinion that you ought to hire a work crew and they go out and start pouring cement and cutting boards and nailing.
Yeah.
But are there ways to incentivize? I mean, the concept of a condominium complex is something that just hasn't seemed to really resonate in Humboldt County. It's all over the other parts of the country. But here, we don't seem to have that thought. But something like that certainly pencils in for those entry-level folks to be able to buy something, at least ride this goofy wave of real estate.
It's interesting you bring that up. We recently had some private developers who did a project, it's not a tax credit project like you see Danco do, but
just a regular
development. They did a 60 something unit subdivision, and they did a planned unit development. So the property setbacks are basically the property lines are the outline of the building. And so their hope is to, you know, and not because of any federal or state incentives or requirements, but they want to do a senior housing project. I think that they like to, and they're going to retain them. They could sell them independently. So, yeah, we have one of those projects, and it's, you know, they're working on the site work, and they've already built three of the homes. So, yeah, we recently saw one, and that's a lot of units. I think what's been tougher, a lot of people.
And seniors is defined as, just for my own gratification,
You would probably qualify. Do you pay full price at Denny's?
I do because I don't ask. I'm not sure where the qualification standards are, but
hopefully you feel better about yourself.
Yeah, I pay full tilt for the milkshake.
Well, no, I'm not sure. I don't know if that particular developer has established a criteria. I'd guess it'd be 55 or over, but I don't know for sure.
Comfortably.
They've said. Yeah, again, they didn't take state or federal funding. It's just their business model that they want to provide housing for.
So it's the profile they want of the residents.
That's right.
As much as anything.
Yeah, and they manage other complexes where they have senior housing, and I think they, you know, they like that clientele, and I think they like providing, you know, the maintenance care of that facility. And so I think it's going to be an interesting project for people to see. A lot of people don't want to maintain yards and big open space areas.
And there's really not an option for them here unless you want to live in the dorms.
No. And so you're really just, you know, more paying for what that community space would be, and then the price of the residence itself.
Yeah, it's like having a condominium group or association.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, fine. That's pretty routine instead of having to buy a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
And then, you know, one of the other things we're looking at is we're looking at initiating a community development block grant program to assist RCA. They own a number of, you know, income restricted apartment buildings in the city of Fortuna, and they're old and they're dated. And so we're just starting to talk with them, and we're interested in pursuing a CDBG grant to try to fix up their building. So,
similar to like a facade grant in the old days?
Not so much, but it's really going in and making energy efficiency improvements. You know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done for, you know, an apartment that was built 30 years ago or 20-something years ago. So a lot of updates. And we're just starting to talk with them now. They approached us in the past about using some of our program income, but I think we're going to wait till the next grant call, you know, notice of funding availability, and then pursue that project, because let's make the low-income housing that we have in the city better. So that's one thing we're looking at. We're also, we have a couple of things that we're working on right now that I think are exciting that fit well with Fortuna, but one of them is the accessory dwelling unit standards and multifamily standards. So we're trying...
Mother-in-law units?
Mother-in-law units.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so the state really relaxed the rules on this.
Or pardon me, I better say this slowly.
Parent-in-law.
She sheds.
She sheds. I haven't heard that before.
But with plumbing and electricity.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we pursued a grant to update the city's accessory dwelling unit ordinance, and the rules are much restricted in accordance with state law. So how can we make it easier for people to build those? And those, I think, fit in really nice with existing neighborhoods, and they also can be a nice source of income for property owners, if, say, if they're going to rent them out.
Yeah, if it's designed properly, right. It should be complimentary rather than looking like all of a sudden the town's got a whole bunch of outhouses again.
Right. So we're identifying, you know, what those can look like in their size and design standards, so that if people meet those standards, they can come in and it makes it much easier for them to get a permit.
Now, is there, I know this sounds kind of goofy, but is there acceptance from the building community, the trades, to be able to do these? Do we have those folks around?
Absolutely.
I would think it's a specialization.
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing builders who, one in Fortuna who did a recent subdivision, is incorporating, they're actually building them into their, it's not like they have an existing home, they're building accessory dwelling units into a brand new subdivision. So in a spot where you might, even on a 6,000 square foot lot where you might have had one unit, now you're seeing two in some cases. And you know, I'm not sure exactly how their business model plays out, but it must make economic sense to have two smaller rentals. And, you know, so that might be one example of where some of the state housing policies maybe aren't the worst thing, if we can incorporate more of these ADUs. It benefits property owners. It creates more units.
Kind of like a detached duplex.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is one that does work pretty well. And I think our design standards, once they're finished, will really make it easier for people to do those and give them a better understanding.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, housing is something, it seems, I don't know, you know, I would like to think I didn't have that kind of influence. But talking about it in the terms of infrastructure is something we've talked about for the last couple of years here. And now it seems like there's an embracing of that conceptually in the area, that this is just as critical as roads, as sidewalks, as sewer, as, you know, wastewater, everything else, because we've hit whatever the carrying capacity is. It's there, and it's impacting businesses, trying to get people to relocate here, or for current staff to stay here. You know, I mean, you keep hearing more and more stories.
Yeah.
And until we start to see the economic growth in our area that a lot of other places have experienced, this really is a huge, huge issue. Are there communities throughout the state that are incentivizing developers to build not the low income, but the entry level homes and condos in their communities to make this happen? Just, we will waive the development fees or the hookup fees or whatever fees that it might be out there to make it more attractive to have this kind of home building going on in your towns.
Yeah, I think different cities are taking different approach, and you know, there are targets for the different types of residential construction, but they're mostly based on income. So are you building enough, you know, single family, middle income? Are you building low income? And those are, get back to the RENA numbers that are.
So you have standards or numbers that the city needs to hit.
We have targets that we're trying to meet. And
so I would think 150 to 2.25 retail price homes would hit that middle income thing.
Yeah.
Right, between the eyes.
We're not having any problem hitting our middle income target and creating single family residences. There's still quite a bit of developable land in Fortuna. And so I think that's not as much of a struggle for us.
And the builders are building?
That's right.
You mentioned a couple of them, but
we are okay. We have a lot of single family residences on vacant property being constructed right now.
Just smaller pieces of
regular
property.
Single family homes.
Yeah.
You know, any 6,000 square foot lot, some bigger and some nicer, and then some small, you know, but even a modest house on a small lot is not cheap these days.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I think it'd be really hard to build even a 1,200 or 1,500 square foot house and have it qualify for low income. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
We're not seeing a problem with having more single family, but we haven't seen a lot of development in the lower income level. So one of the things that we're doing is we recently received a LEAP grant. I can't remember LEAP. I can't remember what the acronym is, but it's a state grant, and we're looking at different areas within the city. And this one's focused around the mill site, where there are some multifamily housing properties designated for multifamily housing. How can we improve the infrastructure to allow the development of those properties? And, you know, are there zoning changes? Are there some road networks that we can identify? So we're trying to make it easier for those multifamily properties to be developed with not a lot of the expenses for infrastructure, or at least identifying what they are so those costs can be known.
Hookup fees and things of that nature that are, I guess, routinely charged.
Yeah.
Where do those come from? I mean, what, I know there's a cost to have city staff to come and help out. Okay. But they're getting paid anyway. So where is this additional? Is that for the hardware, the products itself to allow the hookup? What is that?
There's a few different rates and fees. And typically, so the city adopts water and wastewater fees. And we're talking about utility fees. You know, those are really the aside from electricity and other things. But the city has water and sewer, and those are utilities. So you have a capital connection fee, which is essentially reserves your capacity. So when you're talking about water, if somebody comes in and they want to, you know, a standard residential meter, like a 1-inch or a 3/4-inch meter, those have a set price, and it's an assumed capacity that you would, you know, volume that you would use. So you're essentially, that's a
the
fee
average
that you
home
pay
will
into
use
the system for that capacity.
Okay.
And then you have an installation fee for a water meter, or if it's a sewer, a sewer lateral. So there's, and then when you're also,
so those are the hard costs.
Yeah, and if you're doing a building, you know, if you're getting a building permit for new construction, they actually do a fixture count to look at, you know, how many different fixtures do you have for
water? How
many
faucets?
Yeah, to determine
faucets and toilets
to determine what your connection fee is for water.
So it's a ratio.
Yes.
So
they,
just out of curiosity, how much does a hose cost?
A hose?
Yeah, I mean an outside
a garden
spigot.
Hose?
Yeah. You have one of those?
I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
I don't calculate a lot of the fees.
A little too granular for you?
You
could say yes, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm captain doesn't necessarily look at the rudder.
I'm a big picture guy.
Yeah. Oh, that must be your eyes giving out. We start high, we end low. That's the name of the game. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
See everybody tomorrow.
Thank you.